we can have several topological problems that through symplectization change it into the category of symplectic geometry and use the J-holomorphic disk technique to study topological problems, then go back to the original topological setting and get some combinatorial and algebra computations. This is not the talk. I'm trying the microphone. How about keep one of the front light, then sometimes I can use the blackboard. Sometimes I need to use the blackboard, so can you put some front light? Just one side. I sometimes I will need it to make more calculation and the details. Okay, so can we, okay, maybe we should wait for about 1 minute, just 1 second. Okay. Okay, so probably we can start it. So the title of my talk is the degeneration of the J holomorphic disk modular space and the Lagrangian contact homology. You see there are four modular spaces here, and two of them has already been talked several days ago. This metric ribbon tree modular space has been talked by Professor Penner with a relation to the marked Eman surface. And this gradient flow tree modular space is a talk several days ago by Professor Ralph Cohen and Veronique. Now we are going to use them to get something, some topological invariant. The relation is that there is a one-one correspondence, actually a diffeomorphism between this metric ribbon tree modular space and the marked disk modular space. And as an image, we can map this symmetric ribbon tree modular space to the gradient flow tree modular space. I will explain later what is the gradient flow tree modular space. And map this marked disk modular space to the J holomorphic disk modular space. So this is the domain part and this is the image part. There's a work by Fukai and Ork on this open zero loop open string. Let me write zero loop, the paper's name, Fukai and Ork, zero loop open string in the cotangent bundle and the Morse homotopy. Relate this J holomorphic disk modular space to this gradient flow tree modular space. This show these two modular spaces are diffeomorphic when this boundary Lagrangian in the cotangent bundle are very close to the zero section. So this basically that's the result. And my task is to generalize this work to the multi-covering case. So I will explain what is the multi-covering case later. And because this generalization is necessary to study the braid invariants. Basically we start from the braid, then construct some multi-covering Lagrangian submanifold and use the J-holomorphic disk ending on this Lagrangian submanifold to study the contact homology, and finally all this computation can be reduced to some critical points and the combinatorics by this degeneration method. Okay, so let me give the simplest case in the degeneration so you see, you can get the main idea. So it dates back to Flohr about this Lagrangian intersection theory. Consider in the cotangent bundle two exact Lagrangian submanifolds, DF1 and DF2. And consider the holomorphic strip ending on these two Lagrangian submanifolds. And then we want to study the limit behavior when this epsilon goes to zero. And you will see this strip will project down to the base manifold as a gradient flow line of F2 minus F1. Yeah, that's a gradient flow line of F2. Minus F1, which is X tau here. And you can show, actually, these two modular spaces, the gradient flow collecting X1 and X2 and the J holomorphic disk ending on this two Lagrangian collecting this X1 and X2 actually are diffeomorphic to each other. And the proof is not hard. So you construct the approximated solution in this way. So this is the rough picture. You're starting from this gradient flow x tau and use the Hamiltonian flow of this capital F1 and capital F2, which roughly is the extension of this F Morse function trivially to this quaternion bundle, but keeping constant on every fiber. And you see, follow this blue line, this gradient flow is mapped to this lower boundary of this epsilon df1, and a flow along this black line, black flow, this x tau will map to this epsilon df2 boundary, and this map w epsilon tau t is approximate holomorphic, and then you can use the implicit function theorem to get the true holomorphic disk. This is basically the proof. Okay, then after this, you may attempt to collapse in not just this two punctured, this can be regarded as a two punctured disk mapped to this quaternion bundle. You may also try to collapse in holomorphic triangle instead of just holomorphic strip. In this case, you can guess what is a degenerated object. At the beginning, near this collar, you can still get some gradient flow line, which is the difference of F3 minus F1 here. And near this corner, you also can get some gradient flow here and gradient flow here. And they should intersect together in the center. And indeed, the proof also goes in this way. You first start from this three gradient flow, intersect at a common point X, and construct the approximate solution exactly as Flora did. So in this is not really the proof. This is the main idea of this proof. So you introduce this cylindrical domain, which in physics literature is also called the string coordinate, and in mathematics it's called the finite metric ribbon tree. And use this domain to parameterize this approximated holomorphic disk. It's crucial to use this coordinate, otherwise it's hard to produce approximated solution. So you see this this blue region, you use this the method of Flora to produce the approximated solution here, here, and here. Then, of course, this is not the complete solution. You need to glue these three pieces together, and then you can get this approximated holomorphic polygon. Then by implicit function theorem, you get this true holomorphic polygon. So let's see how can we overcome this difficulty. So first, let me briefly review this definition of a ribbon tree, metric ribbon tree, and this concept. So a ribbon tree is a tree equipped with a cyclic ordering on every interior vertex, and all the interior vertex has violence greater or equal to 3. A metric ribbon tree is just you put some non-trivial metric on every interior edge, and for the exterior edge, you automatically let all the exterior edge to be length infinity. This is for some more theoretic purpose. Okay, then that is the metric ribbon tree modular space. You can show this is a modular space diffeomorphic to RK minus 3. And by the way, this is a marked disk modular space. Maybe it's well known. You just take K marked point on the puncture and this modular space, modular this conformal relation, then you get this RK minus 3. And the important thing is that this two modular space has a nice 1-1 correspondence, which is very useful. Let me see if I get this. This is the 1-1 correspondence of this two modular space. So start from a metric ribbon tree here. You first thicken it by width 1 and glue them together in this way. Glue this strip together and get this simply connected region with a singular flat metric almost everywhere except these red points. And you can show this peak ground singularities, and roughly it is this it is locally looks like the singularity of this quadratic differential, and then you can determine a conformal structure on this region, and then use Zeeman mapping theorem, you get a marked disk. So this region and this region are conformally equivalent, but this one is more convenient for our purpose, and it's called this string coordinate, and we'll use this coordinate to write down the approximate solution later. Okay, there, so this is the theorem in Foucault and Orr. These two modular spaces are diffeomorphic to each other, and this is K equals 4 case. This two modular space, metric Lipschitz modular space, and this is a metric Lipschitz modular space, and this is a marked disk modular space. Okay. What is the B? In the bottom or in? With a P program. PP means this, how many vertices? 1, 2, 3, PIP equals 3. Okay. Now, let's formulate this question more precisely. So what is a holomorphic polygon? It's a marked disk with Z1, Z2, Zk, and arc L1, L2, Lk. Map this Z1 to this X1, this arc L1 to this DF1, and so on. You get this cyclic map. This is a holomorphic polygon we are talking about. And what is a degenerate object? It is precisely the object talked by Professor Rahim several days ago of this this gradient flow tree modular space. It can be viewed as some map from the some metric ribbon tree to the target manifold, following this rule. So along every edge, you see first I mark several F1, F2, F3, F4, several Morse functions on several domains. And along every edge, the gradient flow should follow this F left E minus F right E. So the local picture, look at here. So suppose this is F4 and this is F2, then the gradient flow along E should be F4 minus F2. And follow this convention. This is the gradient flow tree modular space we'll use. Actually, Foucault and Orr we'll use. And I will briefly outline their proof why these two modular spaces are the same, and you will see why it is possible to generalize to be the multi-covering case. So first, this is the theorem. This is the J holomorphic disk modular space, and this is the gradient flow tree modular space. And in Foucault and Orr's paper, they show these two modular spaces are diffeomorphic to each other under the generic condition. So this F1, F2, this Morse function should be perturbed to achieve some transversality. And the proof goes in this way. Precisely as we did before, we already constructed the approximate solution in this blue region as Flora did. Now we are constructing the central piece. The central piece, we can linearize this problem, and we get this local picture in Cn. We construct, see this red region, this is a cylindrical domain, and some model holomorphic map, W0 tilde. And this W0 tilde should satisfy this holomorphic condition and this asymptotic boundary condition. This W0 t plus I tau, yeah, I forgot to tell you this coordinator is tau here and t here. T goes from 0 to 1 and tau goes from 0 to minus infinity to produce this. And the reason to put this asymptotic condition is because if you rescale these three blue pieces divided by epsilon, and then you'll see when epsilon goes to 0, these three pieces precisely go to this this boundary value. So you want to match this guy to this guy. So when epsilon goes small, you need to make this boundary behavior the same. So that's why they put this boundary condition. And it turned out to be, this equation can be solved purely by manipulating Riemann mapping theorem. You don't need to use NMPD, just use Riemann mapping theorem, you can explicitly construct the solution. And then once you construct this piece, then you just glue them in the usual way, glue this four pieces together and produce the approximate solution. And now we turn to the important topic, how to estimate the debye error, because this is just an approximate solution. So how can we control this debye error And there's an important identity, not inequality, I want to write it down. This debug error will be some factor, C times epsilon 1 plus P, depending on this epsilon scaling of this Lagrangian, and a factor, which is LP gradient energy of this gradient flow. So in this sense, you really see the holomorphic disk, the debug error, is controlled by the LP gradient flow, LP gradient energy of this base manifold gradient flow line. And to use implicit function theorem, it's crucial to get some uniform debug error estimate. So this leads to study the compactification of this gradient flow tree modular space. So I draw two typical elements in this gradient flow tree modular space. Basically, you just add this broken gradient trees, and that's the compactification of the whole modular space, just like in Moore theory. And then, with this uniform debug estimate, because this guy, this G, is uniformly bounded on the whole modular space, you can get an implicit function theorem, and you get this, this is a uniform bounded, you get this LP energy is uniformly bounded, hence the debug error is uniformly bounded. Then we can use implicit function theorem to get to prove their theorem. This is a very rough outline of their proof, but actually there are lots of analytical details, and including some Stratton induction, because this tree, this gradient flow tree modular space are stratified by the topological type, so it's really not so, can't be said in just one sentence. And what I will do now is to generalize this setting to the multi-covering case. Notice in that case, so what is the multi-covering case? So first, there are more things we can do than Fukuhara Ox paper. First, for example, you consider this T star S1 and consider this type of multi-covering function. You cannot tell globally what is F1 and F2, because if you say this is F1 when you go to here, then you go to here, then this is F1 again, then you go back, then go back to F1. So there are some morphology switching these branches, so you can't tell the globally which is F1, F2, and Fk, so that doesn't make any sense. Also, because you can't talk about these branches F1, F2, Fk, then the holomorphic disk ending on this F1, F2, Fk doesn't make any sense more. So it may happen that first it lies on Lagrangian delta 1, lambda 1, then lambda 2, then come back to this Lagrangian manifold lambda 1 again, and then you can have some repeated, you may have the side of this holomorphic polygon sit on the same Lagrangian submanifold. From the Morse homotopy point of view, and also from the Morse homotopy point of view of Fukuhara Ox, they don't need this type of holomorphic disk with a repeated edge on the same Lagrangian, but for geometric purpose, it's important to study this type of holomorphic disk. So that's what I'm going to generalize. Okay. So first is the concept of the multi-covering Lagrangian submanifold. And this is a formal definition. Our Lagrangian submanifold L in the cotangent bundle is multi-covering if it can be represented by some M tilde to an immersion H M tilde to T star M, where M tilde is a covering space, finite sheet covering space of the base manifold M, and this composition of the map pi and H. So first you map this space to T star M, then project it down to the base manifold, has no singularity. So for example, this one is a multi-covering submanifold, and this one is not, because when you project it down, this has a vertical tangent. So this one is not multi-covering. And then I want to study this exact Lagrangian submanifold. That means you put back this canonical one form in this cotangent bundle back to this immersed Lagrangian submanifold. Then this F star lambda is a Then this is the definition of the exact Lagrangian submanifold. Then I want to study Lagrangian submultiple, which is both multicurrent and exact. The point is that I really want this identity, this L can be written as DF in the cotangent bundle. Even now, this F is not in the Eurasian sense. Yeah. This is H. If I use H here, this should be H. Yeah. Wait a second, it's not this edge. So that's what I'm going to talk about, this multi-covering function. Yeah, I should use the edge again. Sorry. Edge. Yeah. And now I want to define this multi-covering function, which is locally is just the Euro function, but it's k-valued. So at one point on the base manifold, there are k values. For example, it looks like here. You have one point, you have k values of this function. And locally, it's just f1, f2, fk. So f2, fk. Then if you go along this curve and take a nearby neighborhood, you may have another F1, F2, Fk, and they coincide each other up to permute this component. So this is the definition of the multi-covering function. And the purpose to introduce this multi-covering function is that you want to write the multi-covering Lagrangian submanifold as a DF, where F is a multi-covering function. Then, because this L locally can be written as this F1, F2, and Fk, then you can adopt the method to produce approximate solution as Fokker and Orff or as Flohr to get the approximate solution, then glue them together and use implicit function theorem. Okay, so far, compact. If it's simply connect, no, my manifold M can be arbitrary among my Lagrangian is I don't think so. So not universal covering, it's K-sheet covering. K-sheet covering. Yeah, so the symbol gamma is S1. Let's say M is S1. M is S1, let's say. Let me give you the simplest example, then you'll see. But you can still talk about the multi-valued function.
That means it's actually
separate sheets.
Yes.
It can't be disjoint.
Then you can look at them separately
instead of one. Yes, you can look at, So that's, M is just a compact in my manifold. Okay. Now, this generation caused several difficulties. So first, you can't talk about this global marking F1, F2, Fk anymore. So when you try to define the gradient flow, you need to be a little bit more careful. So this is the way to define the gradient flow. So start from, so let's say this is gamma zero at one point, and locally this flow is described by this F2 minus F1 because I'm using this multi-covering function. Locally, it's just several bunches of functions. Then continue this way to here, then locally you can still write this F1, F2 and by the continuity of this ODE and the definition of this multi-covering function, you can extend this gamma to minus infinity to plus infinity. Then this is a gradient flow. And I want to establish some similar property of this type of gradient flow combined to this usual Morse flow. So the important property is that first this it can't wind infinite many times. That's because this flow is basically induced from this exact multi-covering function because it's exact. So it can passing through one point at most k times k minus 1 times. The reason is that when you follow this flow, this F2 minus F1, the value decreases. And when it go back, it switches bunches. And there are k times k minus 1 possibility to pair Fi and Fj. when I is not equal to j, so it can wind at most k times k minus 1 times. And second, the total length of any flow on this manifold, the total length is finite, universally bounded by some constant, say mg. Then you can establish the similar property that the gradient flow can converge to this, can only converge to this broken gradient flows. So that's some similar property as in Mohs theory. Then with this Mohs flow, this induced gradient flow, I want to define the gradient flow tree in this Monte Carlo Lagrangian setting. And I also will make some new difficulties. The reason, recall that in the exact case, in the Fokine-Orff case, you can talk about this F1, F2, F3, F4. Then your Kernian node along this edge of this metric ribbon tree, which gradient flow you should follow. For example, along here, you should follow this F4 minus F2. But in the Monte Carlo case, you along any edge, you don't know what is this F1, F2, Fk. So you don't know how to flow this edge. And the observation is that in this case, every vertex, these three gradients satisfy a balancing condition. These three gradient vector add up to zero. The reason is that this gradient is F2 minus F3, then this is F3 minus F4 and F4 minus F2. Say there is a balancing condition at every interior vertex. Now you can do it in this Monte Carlo case. So notice at every interior vertex, you can restrict to this type of gradient flow tree. At every interior vertex, the gradient flow is just the gradient flow of some F1, F minus F2, F2 minus F3, till Fj minus F1, some cyclic differences. And by this ODE extension property, if you know these gradient flows, then it's uniquely extended outside by this Monte Carlo property. So my object is the map from a metric ribbon tree to the target manifold, map this leaf to this critical point P, which is a projection of the south intersection of this Monte Carlo Lagrangian submanifold. And along every edge, it's just the gradient flow I just defined, the induced gradient flow. But importantly is the balancing condition. At every interior vertex, this several gradients should satisfy this balancing condition. If you define this one, then you can use this balancing condition to show the gradient flow tree modular space is a finite dimensional smooth manifold of this dimension. This is this is a manifold L, this is the Monte Carlo Lagrangian submanifold, this P are the K critical points. So this is the base manifold, and take the K south intersections of this Lagrangian submanifold L and project it down to the base manifold, and then this is the P1, P2, and the Pk. And then you consider all the gradient flow trees ending on this Pi with a topological type T. In this case, there are three topological types. Then you can show this is a finite dimensional smooth manifold. Now, I'll study the compactification of this new gradient flow tree modular space. The compactification is very similar to the old one, except there are some new element in the compactification. So the first type element is just as in the Mohs theory or in the Fokine-Orff case, the broken gradient flow trees. You can add a critical point on the interior edge or the exterior edge. But the second one doesn't show up in Fokine and Orff setting. This is I call it repeated marking gradient flow trees. So this is the simplest example of this element. Suppose near this interior vertex, this gradient flow locally is F1 minus F2, F2 minus F3, and F3 minus F2, then F2 minus F1. Then this gradient flow tree just has one side resolution. So you see, you can have this type of gradient flow tree nearby because this F1 minus F3 is a Morse function. But if you try to resolve it in this way, you get this F2 minus F2, which is identically zero. So this is not allowed in this gradient flow tree module space. So this type of element also should be added to this compactification. And it turned out to be this all the elements you need to compactify this space. The reason is that for a metric ribbon tree, when you net the parameter L, this is the parameter L, when you let this L goes to infinity, then you will create a critical point. But if you let this L go to zero, you may have this situation. This originally this L, you have this F1 and F3 on both sides of L. When you're collapsing them together, then you have so the same F2 together, and you can resolve it in this way. So when L go to infinity or L go to zero, then you get these two compactification elements. And of course, you can mix them together, so that you can have more both broken edge and both this repeated marking interior vertex in this compactification. Once you get this compactification, the important observation is that the LP gradient energy is still uniformly bounded in this gradient flow tree modular space. The reason is that in this type of element, it's the same as for kind of, and in this case, because LP gradient energy is a continuous function of this F1, F2, Fk, and a very small perturbation of this Fi won't affect the LP gradient energy. So you build this uniform gradient, uniform LP gradient energy control. Okay, so now I will. So this is my theorem. This gradient flow tree modular space with a topological type T can be embedded to this J holomorphic disk modular space. The reason I just write the T is a tree bound topological trees, is because this is the top stratum in this. Okay. So. The reason why I write this T is because, let me have a small blackboard here, is because tree bounded tree is the top stratum in this gradient flow tree modular space. And at every interior vertex, this it can't have further more resolutions. But if you consider more high valency trees, it might have more complicated resolutions. In producing this approximate solution, it's important to understand the local model around the vertex. If it's a tree valent, then the local model is always like this, so that's simple. But if it's like 4 valent and 5 valent, then you have more complicated deformation, and then it's hard to produce the approximate solution. In Fukai and Ox paper, they also started this type of this approximate solution, but if this resolution is complicated, their paper is not in detail about this, how to, they just write down this approximate solution, and but then the error estimate and many things is just outlined, but not in full detail. So because I don't know how much it can be written out and how much is it really read through, so I can only say it's an embedding. But if I fully understand for kind of Ox's paper, then possibly I can show actually these two modular spaces actually are diffeomorphic to each other. But now it's safe to say just for tree-valent topological trivalent gradient flow trees can embed to this modular space. This is enough for my purpose about this braid environment. You will soon see. Now I switch to this contact homology and the relation to this grade invariance. So first let me recall, no, not this page. Again, is this page? Not this page. Sorry. Not this page. This one. Not this. Yeah, this one. Okay. Now I want to switch to study the contact homology in one jet space and explain why it's related to this cotangent bundle. So recall the one jet space is a T star M, the cotangent bundle cos R, and the alpha is a canonical contact one form in this space. So if you write this one as x, y, and z coordinate, then alpha equals dz minus y dx. This is a contact, it's a canonical contact space associated to a manifold M. And then this part is a brief introduction to the definition of the contact homology. So let N alpha to be a contact manifold with a contact form alpha, and L is the random submanifold inside this contact manifold. And then we can define its simplification as this one, S equals N cross R, and D is the power T times alpha. Then this is the symplectic form in this symplectized manifold. And then we can define the rib vector field, which is satisfy these conditions. Then with this rib vector field, we can consider the rib chord, which is generated by this rib field, which is a rib flow beginning and ending on this the random submanifold L. Now we can define the random contact homology using this rib chord. So it's defined in this way. You consider the holomorphic disk with several punctures, one positive puncture and all the others are negative punctures, mapped to this symplectization of this manifold S, which equals M cos R, and with compatible, almost complex structures J. Then the, if you put this condition, then it's unique, D alpha. So this rib vector field should be make this d alpha contract by this one to be identically zero. Then, because d alpha actually have one dimensional kernel, it's unique now because you also put this normalized condition alpha r alpha equals one. Then, the definition of this contact homology use this holomorphic disk. So the positive puncture will map to this positive infinite with asymptotics to this rib chord Ci, and the negative punctures will map to this asymptotics Ci1, Ci2, and Cik. And the differential is this dCi equals this this associate algebra, and Nd is zero-dimensional modular space of this J holomorphic disk. So you just make some algebraic summation of this modular space and get this differential. Then this is the definition of the contact homology. And it can be shown in some cases. It's really well-defined, and it's an invariant of the random submanifold isotopy. So you can use it to distinguish the Neurangian submanifold, which are equivalent to each other. With this understood, I want to switch to the braid invariance. So, wait a second. I want to switch to the braid invariance in the one jet space. Okay, so this is the definition. No, not the definition, the relations. So there are several ways to study this one jet space using different projection. So recall the definition of this. Now I will work on T2, only on T2, because T2 is really related to this braid invariance. T star T2 cos R is this one jet space of T2, and it has this Lagrangian projection to the cotangent bound of T2, then has canonical projection to T2 itself. It also has this front projection to this T2 cross R. And it also can be symplectorized in this way, this G1 T2 cross R. Now the contact homology counts the holomorphic disk in this symplectorization, like this way. But if you project down this holomorphic disk to this Lagrangian projection, you will get a holomorphic disk ending on some cusp Lagrangian submanifold and with several punctures. And these punctures precisely correspond to this ripcord. So all the ripcords just project to these punctures. And by this degeneration theorem, you can further project down this this holomorphic disk to the base manifold, the T2, and then this holomorphic disk will look like the gradient flow trees. And this one, because it's just the elementary gradient flow, and because gradient flow tree are more elementary than J holomorphic disk, in the sense that they can be explicitly constructed by the Morse function. So, and also their critical points are easy to find, so you can use them to do some combinatorial computation. So that's why we like this degeneration. So we vary this almost complex structure J in this symplectorization, and it takes a large complex structure limit. Then that corresponding the collapsing of this Lagrangian in this cotangent bundle, so epsilon L. Originally this boundary is L, then if you take the large complex structure here, then this boundary Lagrangian will collapse to this zero section. Then correspondingly, the holomorphic disk here will converge to some gradient flow tree on the base manifold T2. Yeah, which got collapsed? Yeah, let me draw a more big picture. So, which got collapsed? You originally you have this Lagrangian submanifold. Let's call it as L. L is not necessarily smooth. You may have some singularity. Yeah. How this L come from? This L come from this guy. So the relation is that you have this Lagrangian submanifold L here in this one jet space. And if you symplectorize, you get some, let's call L tilde, you get some Lagrangian submanifold in the symplectorization. And this is a symplectic manifold, and T star M is also a symplectic manifold. And this L tilde will project to this L. The Lagrangian submanifold in this symplectic manifold will correspond to the Lagrangian submanifold in this, in T star M. So that's the relation. But this projection may have singularities. So in this one, the Lagrangian submanifold is smooth, but this one it may have some singularity. And using this degeneration, this J holomorphic polygons precisely correspond to this gradient trees, and the ripcords correspond to the critical points, which is the leaves of these trees. And then, at least in the multi-covering case, we can say this one is a 1-1 correspondence, and we can do the computation. And ripcord? What is the ripcord? Yeah, ripcord is defined in this way. So in any contact manifold R, M, you have this contact for alpha. It's a 1-form. And you consider this d alpha. And this is a two-form, and restrict on this on any txn, you may find some vector r alpha such that the contraction is identically zero on this txn. Then this is called the rib vector field. And if you put the normalized condition alpha r alpha equals 1, then this vector field is uniquely determined by this contact form alpha. Then you can use it to generate a flow on this manifold. So suppose this is M, and you will use this vector field to generalize a flow. Then you consider this type of flow, which start and ends on some Lagrangian submanifold, and this call this one as ripcord. So start here and end here. Starting from the Lagrangian submanifold L and end on the Lagrangian submanifold L. Then this one is called ripcord. Question? In this collapsing case, this bubbling won't happen because the area goes very, very small. You make this very, very close to the zero section. That's why. If you don't collapse this Lagrangian submanifold, there's no way to say this two holomorphic disk just is the same as the gradient flow tree. soon you will see why you like T2. Yeah, this is related to the breeding environment. You don't need to to save the space. I want to. I can replace this T2 by M in this picture, but then I need to write this again, replace M by T2. I don't want to do that. Yeah. So let's see why this is related to T2. Okay. So the reason is that. Yeah, you can, but T2 is very useful to study breeding environments. So now you will see why I like T2. And in this, which six dimensional manifold in T? J1, T2, cross R. That's why I prefer to use T star T2. In this six dimensional, this one. Yeah, also, I forgot to tell you, I start from some Lagrangian submanifold L, then I try to understand this L by its projection to here. Also, maybe you can also study it by its simplectization L tutor here. But I think in mining case, at least I like to this method to project it down to lower dimensional instead of make it to the higher dimensional. So you will see why I use T2, why I'm interested in T2. So this is related to the braid. So a K-strand braid can be realized as some map from 0-1 interval to B2. So this is the picture here. So this is a braid. There is a theorem that any braid can be realized in this type. So you have start from zero, then you have three points on this D2, and when this T goes in this direction at one, then these three points go back to their original position again, but maybe there's some monogamy of these three points. And so a braid can be realized as this function, braid function B, which maps T to this B1T, B2T, and BKT, where BIT is a two-dimensional vector inside the D2. And because it's a braid, so B0 equals B1 as a set. There may be some commutation of these points, but as a set, they are the same. And between 0 and 1, this BIT shouldn't coincide with BJT because you don't want this braid have self-intersection. So this is a condition. Now, I will use this braid function to construct a multi-covering function on T2. I construct it in this way. I take the dot product of this BIT with this cosine theta and the sine theta. Then I get a function, this FIT, which is a function from T2 to R. And if you make this F1, F2, and FK as this capital F, then capital F is a multi-covering function on T2. So it's well-defined on the interior of T2, but when you go to the boundaries, because there are some FI may switch due to some monogamy. So this capital F is just a multi-covering function, but not k-valued multi-covering function, but not necessarily can be written as F1, F2, Fk. Not necessarily split into separate pieces. Now, the importance is that once you have a function on this space, usually you can, not usually, but there is a canonical construction to recover this Lagrangian submanifold, because this is the front projection of a Lagrangian submanifold in this way. So once you have a function x and a multi-covering function fx, so this is a function, then you can reconstruct the Lagrangian submanifold in this one jet space by adding this dfx. So this is xfx is n-dimensional object. No, which dimensional? N-dimensional object. And wait a second. X. Then dfx. So in the three-dimensional, maybe it's the easiest. So you have this x and the fx. Then you can take the derivative of this f. You get this f prime x. You get a point in this one jet space. So if you have a function, you can construct a Lagrangian submanifold in this one jet space. So this multi-covering function, I use this multi-covering function, capital F, to construct a multi-covering, a Lagrangian submanifold in J1, T2. And Lagrangian submanifold project back to this T star T2 will be a multi-covering Lagrangian submanifold. Then I can apply the degeneration to compute the contact homology. So the relation is still here. You're starting from a multi-covering function here, then you reconstruct this Lagrangian submanifold L here. Then you project it down to this T star T2 and get this L. Then you use this degeneration to get this gradient flow tree from the J holomorphic disk ending on L. So that's the relation. Then last, I give you an explicit example about this grid invariance. Yeah, it's here. Thanks. So this is the simplest braid, this three-strand braid. By the way, this computation are carried out by Nini, not by me. Yes. The work of Nini uses this degeneration of the gradient flow, use the picture of the degeneration of the J holomorphic disk to gradient flow tree to do the combinatorial computation. But his proof is independent of this degeneration because he finally can make all his proof purely combinatorial, reduce everything into the randomized move. Although his construction is inspired from this gradient flow tree picture. But this is the computation. So suppose you have this three-strand braid. And then you can use them to construct. So, for example, in this braid, how can this look at a section of this braid, how it moves? Then this point moves to here, this point to here, and this one to here. So you see, this is the simplest braid function. This is b1, b2, and b3t. Then I dot product it with a cosine theta sine theta, and I can get a function capital F, which is f1, f2, f3. So if I choose the function properly, it will have four critical points on this t2, and then it gives, because it's f1, f2, and f3, it will give 12 generators, and this is the relation of these critical points. And if you choose a different braid, then you will have a different differential graded algebra. And this one is more interesting. For example, if you dB12 equals A12 plus A23 plus A12 A23, that means B12, if you take the differential, you have one gradient flow go to A12, and one gradient flow go to A23, and a gradient flow tree connecting, a rigid gradient flow tree connecting this B12, A12, and A23. And similarly, if you have this formula, it means the differential of B13 goes to A13, A21, I forgot to draw A21, yeah, A21. And A23, A31 is a gradient flow tree. And A12, A13, A31 is this gradient flow tree. So this B go to A12, A31, and A13. So that's the differential. Okay, so that's the computation. Reduce this gradient invariance into this contact homology. Generation family. Yes, then maybe that's higher dimensional Lagrangian submanifold, and then higher dimensional. Then you need to then probably use. You can still degenerate this holomorphic disk to gradient flow trees, but not in T2 now. It's on a higher dimensional manifold. And maybe it's possible to compute them. Yes, so far I no other people's work have different type of degenerations, like in this toric variety and in the torus fibration, and so there are lots of degenerations, and probably there are some relations between them, but I still don't see. And the quaternion bundle, this one heavily uses string coordinate, which for other degenerations, they use some log map and some different technique to do that. And this, that's why I know so far. Yes, there is another projection to the front, and you can also do some combinatorial computation. Actually, there are some work by many uses front projection. They can also. Yes, there's some relation. They have some paper using this projection to compute.